Good morning, everyone. Tim O'Brien here, the president of BAUS. And the theme of this podcast is Eurolink. And I have three people who've been intrinsically involved in the work of Eurolink over the last few years with me today to explore some of the things that have been done in Eurolink and some of the things that we hope to do in Eurolink over the next few years. We hope that by producing this podcast, listeners will be inspired to support the charity and also to get involved with the charity and contribute to its urological efforts. The three guests are Susie Benn, who has been the chairman of Eurolink for the last 6 years, but has been involved with the charity for the last 16. He's the lead for urology at the Western Sussex NHS Trust. We have Charles Mabedi, who's a urologist in Kamuzu Central Hospital in Lilongwe, Malawi, who has interacted with Eurolink very strongly during his time in the UK and beyond, and it'll be wonderful to hear from him today. Welcome, Charles. Nick Campaign, who's an ST7 in the Southwest, just been appointed at the Royal Devon and Exeter Hospital, and he's been involved with Eurolink since 2013. It's been a big part of his training, and he's going to share some of those thoughts with us too. So, Susie, perhaps we could start with you. Many people listening may not know much about Eurolink. What is it? How did it get going? And what are you doing at the moment? Why don't you give us a little bit about the background to Eurolink?
Okay, Eurolink's history initially is scattered with many of the great names of British urology. In 1985, John Blandy formed links with the associations of surgeons in Africa. And then Jeff Chisholm asked for suggestions to assist with tropical urology. And then finally, the Society, Eurolink Society, was formed under the chair of Neville Harrison in 1990. And became a formal subcommittee of BAUS in 1996. Chairs over the years have included Chris Chappell, Christine Evans, Steve Payne, and Rue McDonald. So the mission statement of then, and really it hasn't changed now, apart from perhaps the wording, is to promote and encourage provision of appropriate urological expertise and education worldwide. And that's still the aim today, but probably more through teaching and training.
I see. What inspired you to get involved? What was it particularly that made you want to engage?
I think like a lot of people, I've always been wanted to do it. And I was lucky enough to get a chance to go out to KCMC in Moshi in Tanzania. KCMC has had a long association with BAUS. The founder of the Institute of Urology at KCMC, Lester Eshelman, met Griff Fellows, who used to work in Oxford, as you know, in the 1990s. And he started a biannual urology workshop, which I first attended in 2005 with Phil Thomas and David Dickinson.
That's Kilimanjaro Christian Medical Centre, is that right?
KCMC? That's correct, yeah. For a long time, that has been a leader in training. And in fact, Charles went there as well, the leading centre in training in East Africa, or probably the only centre in training in East Africa.
Did Eurolink help get that centre really moving, or was it already a centre?
No, absolutely. They were very involved. They supported the workshop. And in fact, at one stage, BAUS gave £20,000 many years ago to finish off building the Urology Institute there. So they've been very involved. There are other people involved as well, Americans and people from the Netherlands. But no, we've been very involved with BAUS. The workshop, as they went on every other year, and numbers of people have been out and spent time there for longer periods as well.
I see.
I think I was lucky because I know lots of people. We know that lots of people would like to spend more time abroad, but it is incredibly difficult when you're starting a career and you've got family. I was very lucky to have a very enthusiastic husband who used to come, and in-laws prepared to look after the kids. So that's how I got involved. But I think there are lots of other reasons why people are involved. So I suspect some people have family abroad because we have a very diverse urology workforce now. And also, I think one thing that I was very aware of is the personal contacts that were made by people who came to train in the UK in the past. One, for example, was Rue McDonald's link with, I can't remember his name, but I'm sure Nick will, who went back and became health minister in Zanzibar and has led to Rue getting very involved in that. I think there are lots of different reasons why people are involved and lots of understandable reasons why people would want to get involved, but it isn't that easy all the time.
Okay, that's really helpful. So KCM's, the relationship with KCMC got things going, but Eurolink now interacts with a number of sites, doesn't it, in sub-Saharan Africa?
Yes, when I took over, we decided we would try, we were a bit scattergun, so we decided to try and focus on three projects initially, and we've added Malawi more recently. So we focused on KCMC, Zambia, and Hawassa in Ethiopia. Projects have been really generously supported by the BGAOI for Hawassa and TUF. The support for those centres has aimed at developing services by going out to provide workshops, by continuing support. And yeah, so that's where we are.
Are there leads for each of those sites?
Yeah, there are leads, but it's tended to be groups of people gone out to train in urethral strictures surgery or endoscopic surgery, with one lead just coordinating it all. I mean, okay. Also, although that's what we've done, particularly over the last 5 years, there are lots of other people supporting centres abroad, not necessarily within Eurolink, although, yeah. For example, Reading goes and supports Uganda. Andrew Jones is on the Eurolink committee, and Graham Watson runs his own charity and goes out lots of times to help develop stone surgery during the year. But there are other people I know who don't particularly interact with Eurolink, but there's no need to do so. They're still doing amazing things abroad, amazing work and help abroad.
We'll maybe come back to that. Maybe we can come back to that later. You mentioned Malawi, and that might be a good moment to bring Charles into the conversation. Charles, you're a urologist in Malawi. Tell us a bit about Malawi and what its health system's like and how you got involved with the UK and urology.
Yes, Malawi is a small, beautiful country in the southern part of Africa. It's a low-income economy, which means that majority of the people live in the rural areas. It's about, based on the latest census, the healthcare system is mostly funded by government, which covers about 80% of, or 70 to 80% of the population. And the remaining 20 to 30% is covered by mission hospitals and private providers. So the government healthcare is free for all to access it. I got involved with Eurolink first when I met Susie in Tanzania and I did my training. To begin with, when I finished my undergraduate training, there was no place to train in Malawi as a urologist. So I started my postgraduate training here in Malawi, but I had to finish it elsewhere. I found Tanzania where I met Susie.
I see. So you're a Malawi national. You wanted to be a surgeon, but you couldn't train in urology because training wasn't available in Malawi. So you had to go to Tanzania to get that training.
Correct. At the time, it wasn't available. And when I finished in Tanzania, I sat down with my senior colleagues to say we have to set up our own training. And fortunately, with a lot of hard work and guidance and support from the Ministry of Health, we managed to set our hospital, Kamuzu Central Hospital, as a specialist training center for urologists in Malawi.
So you're now training people in urology in your own country?
Correct. We're now able to train our first candidate graduate in 2023 because it's a five-year training program. The training is accredited by COSEXA, obviously, to ensure standards.
Just remind listeners what COSEXA is.
COSEXA is a regional training body. It stands for College of Surgeons for East, Central and Southern Africa.
I see.
So it organizes and administers examinations for the region. In total, at the moment, there are about 18 countries who are training the candidates under COSEXA.
I see. That sounds like quite a key organization then. Oh, well, congratulations on what you've managed to do in Malawi. That's incredibly exciting. Have you appointed your first trainee?
Yes, we have. The first one got enrolled way back in 2018. We managed to set the place up in 2017, and a year later, we managed to appoint our first, who is due to 2023. And we hope that we'll be able to recruit two every year and increase as time goes by.
That's wonderful. Maybe I could just cut back to Susie at this point. So, well, it sounds like Charles did an amazing job. You've been involved for 15 years in working in sub-Saharan Africa, Susie. What are the main needs that you've come across? I mean, you're a urethral surgeon, aren't you? But what are the main needs that you've come across in your 15 years?
The main needs are endoscopic surgery. Currently, benign prostates are all done open. And as we know from the past, that's higher morbidity and longer stay. So developing endoscopic or helping them develop endoscopic surgery has been one of the key training. They have a lot of strictures. The roads are poor, and so that lots of fractured pelvises. Unfortunately, they're extremely complex strictures. And so helping develop stricture surgery has been another of the key areas. There's always a need for help with the paediatric urology. The adult urologists do hyperspadias work very well, but they struggle with some of the more complex congenital abnormalities. And then finally, stones. Stones are variable. Some areas have very low stones and some are very high. But again, there's been no endoscopic stone surgery at all. So if you have a stone, it is still generally removed open. And particularly Graham Watson has been helping centres develop PCNL and train in PCNL and ureteroscopy.
I see. So one can identify the need. How do you sort the need out? What have you done? I mean, how have you trained people to do urethroplasty, and have you trained people in ureteroscopy? What's been your strategy?
Going out to do workshops to train intensively for a week, and then going back, consistently going back, following up. So, for example, in Zambia, we signed off the team there. They no longer need support. They're able to do TURPs without any further assistance. The different centres are at different stages. KCMC has been doing urethra, has been doing endoscopic surgery for a long time. It's very well equipped. It's had quite a lot of support with getting more equipment. Zambia was new, but is now signed off, as is Hawassa. So urethroplasty, again, it's a support, but also mentoring. I think Charles would agree, being able to ask often online, that Charles will put a case up and we'll discuss it. But we've also gone over, or particularly Paul Anderson has been going over with Steve Payne and training in urethroplasty, and David Dickinson in those centres for do workshops and then come back, and they're getting increasingly confident and then starting. I mean, the achievement is when people out there are training their own.
Of course.
Not leading us anymore. Becoming self-sufficient in that. Equipment is a major issue. We have in the past given lots of equipment. It hasn't always been looked after very well. So I don't have all the answers about equipment. Ideally, they build their own out there. And
Perhaps I could just bring Charles in again at this point. Charles, equipment. Do you have the right equipment to do the work you've been trained to do?
No, not always. I was lucky that we've been able to get support. Susie and Eurolink and other partners have helped to get us going with lower tract endoscopic surgery. So all our prostates, bladder cancers, we're able to do them endoscopically when appropriate. But as Susie rightly said, when you have the kid, you have to look after it because it breaks so easily. And again, this part of the world, to get it serviced is also another thing. So
yes.
I think after it is just a must. Otherwise, it breaks so easily.
Do you think there's a need for training of theatre nurses and theatre technicians and the sterile services technicians so that in order to deliver this type of work, one has the appropriately trained support services in place?
Absolutely. We saw this when we started. We had appointed specific nurses, and then some point they changed. And then we saw how much kit we lost with that change. So it's indeed important to have a support team around you, the theatre nurses, the local engineers in the hospital, to be able to maintain and keep equipment going.
Okay. I mean, looking forward, Charles, over the next 3 to 5 years, I mean, you're a young guy, aren't you? What do you need from British urologists over the next 3 to 5 years? How could they help you most? What would you ask for in the next 3 to 5 years in terms of help in order that you'll thrive?
The two main areas that I want to focus on in the next 3 to 5 years. First is training. We need to strengthen our training. So having mentorship from experienced colleagues to come and join us or work us remotely, as we've started with Susie, that would be very helpful for me and also for my trainees. Secondly, equipment. Having successfully managed to establish lower tract endoscopic surgery, I'd like to move on to upper tract surgery. It does require a lot of investment, the telescopes and energy source, for example, a laser machine. And again,
are you thinking PCNL or ureteroscopy or both?
Both. I'm thinking both.
I see. Wow. Well, that sounds like something we can definitely help with, doesn't it? Maybe I could just bring Nick in at this point. I'm thinking about the next 3 to 5 years, and the Steve Paynes and Susie's and things aren't going to be around for the next 15 years. Nick, how are you going to tell us a bit about how you got involved with you're a young urologist in the UK. You've got a whole career ahead of you. How did you get involved, and how do you plan to support the organisation in the future?
So as I got involved initially, I'd already had an interest in global health, and I'd spent some time abroad as an undergraduate medical student not related to urology. And then I spent a year after my foundation program working in rural hospital in Zanzibar for Rue McDonald's charity HIPS. So I'd already had an interest. And then an opportunity came up after my core training to do a Eurolink fellowship, which was something that Baus funded and, you know, looked for someone to do, to really try and understand a little bit about the burden of urological disease, training pathways. And essentially my role was to spend some time in various parts of Africa and report back to the committee about, you know, how, what were the issues, and a bit of a input as to how to move things forward. And that's where the focusing on sort of three main centres at the time came from to some extent. That was sort of how I got involved initially, that I've been able to stay involved. Yeah, so I've been very, very fortunate. And during most years of training, I've managed to spend a bit of time away somehow, either through a combination of study leave and annual leave, but mainly sort of built on contacts and opportunities that I'd been very fortunate to have an early point in my career. And that's something that I'm, you know, I consider myself very lucky with those opportunities. And the thing to answer the second part of your question that I'd really like to do, begin as a consultant, is to make these opportunities more readily accessible for Baus members, both young consultants and trainees. And there's a lot of exciting work going on at the moment sort of around all of that.
Do you want to tell us, there may be people listening in who, you know, are trainees and they think, oh, I'd like to do something like that. How could I get involved? Why don't you just give a thumbnail as to how people could get involved or what they could do, what opportunities, what are these new opportunities?
Yeah, so I mean, the best thing to do, first of all, contact anyone involved with Eurolink. I think anyone that's been involved with Eurolink is always really keen and happy to be contacted by anyone that's interested in this type of work. So make yourself known, Baus. We keep a list of all trainees that are interested and we'll send out opportunities as they come up. And there will be a lot more opportunities coming up in the next couple of years. So TUF have funded some bursaries to support trainees and they're going to be advertised later in the year. And that will be grants to go out on existing Eurolink trips, and that's specifically for UK trainees to go on. But equally, people have done other things in the past. So taken time out of training as an UPI, and Eurolink are keen to support anyone wanting to undertake periods of time away from training. So if you get in contact with anyone on the committee, then, you know, Baus are very keen to support any new ideas, really.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Do you have a particular link with one of the centres? Has your relationship been with one particular place or not?
So, I mean, I've spent a bit of time in most of the centres, actually, but I probably spent most time in Zambia because that's where I spent the longest amount of time during my sort of pre-registrar fellowship. And then I've been fortunate enough to go back on a couple of the TURP workshops during my training. And I've got very good contacts with the trainees there. I'm sort of in regular contact with some of them most months about various things. So I think that's the other thing I'd really emphasize, is a lot of the benefits from this come from developing relationships. So having been to one place, spent a lot of time there, been back regularly, I consider these urological colleagues, some of them as friends as well now. So that really helps. Yeah.
That sounds wonderful. Do you think it's made you a better urologist at home?
Undoubtedly. I mean, I think I was thinking about this in preparation for this talk, and the way we train in the UK is to move around different departments and see different ways of doing things. And I think as a trainee going on a Eurolink trip, just that process but amplified, because you go and see and stand different ways of doing things. You see pathology that you never see in the UK, and you learn a lot about, you know, the bigger, wider world and the bigger picture. So I think there's no doubt that it's beneficial.
Do you think it's made you more tolerant of some of the NHS's shortcomings?
Definitely. I think when you come back, you do really, it's a bit of a cliche, you know, I think a lot of people that go and get involved with global surgery say this sort of thing, but that's because it's so true. When you come back from a visit where you've been adapting to having, you know, a lot less available resource, you do really appreciate what you do have in the NHS. So I definitely agree with that.
Are there other NIC campaigns in the UK, or are you a one-man band?
No. I mean, there's lots of people. There's loads of trainees who've been on trips. And if you go to the Eurolink website, all of the visit reports are on there. And a couple of trainees recently, Struan and Michael, went out to ATMC on the most recent workshop, and speaking to them, you know, it's changed their view on what they might like to specialize in within urology. It's really motivated them to stay involved. And there's, I can name loads. Dom Teichman went and did an EP and spent a lot of time at various Eurolink centers. So there's loads of people out there who are interested, doing really good things. And what we'd like to do is try and encourage more and more people to do that as well.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you. Maybe, Susie, could I just bring in something we haven't talked about is pediatrics. My impression is that pediatrics is a major need in Africa. Are you involved in pediatric surgery as well when you go out, Susie?
It's very complex, the surgery that they give us, but we've often taken a pediatric surgeon with us on the trip, or pediatric urologist. Almost all of the names over the years have been out. So being a real asset, we take them with us on our trips, basically. And yes, the need is enormous. I mean, if you have to remember that most of the population's under 40, it's a big proportion of your work, of their work, isn't it, Charles?
Yes, it is. And having a pediatric surgeon in the hospital really helps.
Susie, you've obviously been at the helm of the organisation. I mean, how many trips have you done?
Lots and lots. 20, I guess. I don't know, over the years. It's by far and away the most rewarding part of everything I do, going over there. It's a great experience. It, as you say, as Nick said, put so well, it really reminds you how lucky you are. But yeah, it's a fantastically rewarding experience. And in fact, doing the Eurolink works, the most enjoyable part of what I do.
That's wonderful. Wow, amazing. Well, I think you've given all of us listening in a real insight into the needs, which is really good, the ongoing needs. Some of the history, which has been really interesting for me to listen to, and some of the inspirational things that can change a urologist's career. It sounds like it's changed your career, Susie, and been a massively important part of your career. And Nick, it sounds like it's going to be a major part of yours. It might just be worth, perhaps back to you, Susie. So people listening in, they might not have been involved before. What would you suggest they did before the end of the year if they wanted to get involved in this organisation?
First of all, probably go to the ABAS website and have a look at the Eurolink section there. It's just recently been revamped by Steve Payne and Hannah, and it's absolutely fantastic. That will be the first port of call to have a look at the trips and the sort of things that have gone on. Obviously, at the moment, we're a bit constrained on visits, as you can imagine. So I think for the end of the year is going to be a difficult time. We have big plans for celebrations next year, once all of this is over, to allow us to expand what we do.
Celebrations of?
Well, 25 years, I guess, next year of Eurolink, its existence. So there have been some thoughts about having a big celebratory dinner and fundraiser. We're tough to raise funds for future projects.
A lack of funds holding it back at the moment?
I would say not really. We've been so supported, and most people who go out don't ask for money anyway. But so I don't think we have been restrained by money, more by the number of people involved. So getting more people involved will be a real plus, and then each perhaps focusing on one area and supporting one area or one project.
Yeah. Is that how it's tended to work, with a particular country being twinned with a particular person or unit? Is that the structure, or has it been a bit more fluid than that?
It's probably been a bit more fluid. People can give up time at different times in their lives. I mean, there are some centres that have particularly twinned with one centre, like the Reading link. There's a personal link, but it hasn't been specifically by hospital twinning with one hospital. I think I wouldn't be rigid and say it has to be one or the other. Anything that works is good.
And if there was a paediatric surgeon listening in, you'd be absolutely delighted if they got involved.
Yeah, we had a really great paediatric urologist came from Leeds, or the last one, but yeah, any others who were interested in being involved, they are always needed, really, really needed. And it is work that we can assist with over there, because it doesn't need a lot of specialist equipment, just expertise. So yeah, definitely.
The one thing you don't need is a robotic radical prostatectomist.
No, but they do. But they love hearing about what's available out there. So they're always enthusiastic to know what the future is looking like. So even to lecture is helpful.
Very good. I think we should bring things to a close. I think it's been excellent. Charles, Nick, Susie, thank you for giving us insights into Eurolink. We'll get this interview posted on the website, and hopefully someone listening in will be inspired to join in the activities and bring the same impetus to the next 25 years that you've brought to the last 25. Well done, and let's keep this organisation moving forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.